Welcome back. This is Computer Talk with Tab, and we are lucky enough to be chatting with the folks on the ground in Columbus, Ohio, Mark Fearborn and Isabel Cleary, who broke the story on this whole issue that's going on with the mayor and the data breach and the first responders' data getting breached and people getting sued not to talk about it. And it's a crazy story, and you guys have been following it for a long time. So I'd love to hear it from you guys as to what's going on in Columbus, Ohio, and what should we be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us on, Eric.
Yeah, thank you so much. Do you want to start?
Yes. Yeah, so this actually kind of goes back all the way to July. It first started out with the city notifying everyone publicly that there had been a cybersecurity incident. And essentially, over time, a little bit more information came out about what exactly had happened. So initially, what the city explained happened was that there was an attempted ransomware attack on the city from some kind of a hacking group. And at the time, they explained that while there was a group that had gained access to the city's systems and was attempting to encrypt everything, as is common in a ransomware attack, the city's IT staff were able to detect it, and they basically shut everything down before the ransomware software could initiate. However, at the same time, our mayor, Andrew Ginther, told us that essentially, while they weren't able to lock the city systems down, they did have access to data while they were inside of the city's systems. And so as time went on, we actually discovered the group that claimed responsibility for the attack. It's the Recita ransomware group. Some people pronounce it Recita. It kind of
tomato tomato. They're all bad guys.
Exactly. And so Recita basically claimed at the time that they had stolen 6 terabytes of data from the city of Columbus, and they were listing it on the dark web, and they wanted to auction it off, and were, you know, setting up a price and a starting bid in Bitcoin for people to send in bids on their dark web website.
And now, so Mark, they're going to auction it off, but they didn't actually do a traditional ransom, right? They decided instead of going to the city and saying, we're going to ransom you for $2 million before we auction it off, they just went and said, we're just going to auction it off, correct?
Yeah, so that's a really good point. As far as we know, and Isabel, correct me if I'm wrong, the city told us that they never received any form of a ransom. Later down the line, they actually said they tried to reach out and negotiate with Recita, but they never heard any response back. And so my thought here is, you know, Recita's history, they've been involved in a couple of other really high profile hacks. One before this was a game development studio. And so their common tactics were basically, rather than, you know, threatening the victim and trying to get a ransom directly from them, they would hold this auction publicly where they basically said they basically wanted those bids in Bitcoin. And if they didn't get anybody to try and bid or buy the data, they just released all of it publicly. And so, it's, you know, in that kind of a scenario, it's probably very scary for the victim who would potentially want to bid on that then to avoid their data being leaked publicly.
Right. And you guys are NBC4 Investigate. So you guys said, wait a minute, we got to investigate this.
That's right. I think right in the beginning, I work a lot with City Hall and City Council, and they had been telling me that their emails were down. We didn't have internet when we went to City Council meetings.
Right.
And there weren't a lot of answers we were getting. So when we first heard from the mayor that it was an incident, we started doing our own research, reaching out to IT experts, trying to learn more, reaching out to cybersecurity professionals. And we actually were able to go on the dark web with the help of one of the people we interviewed right in the beginning and see that auction for ourselves. So we could see what they were advertising. They had screenshots of some of the data that they had, which included traffic cameras, people's desktops. So we were able to prove, hey, that is the city data on there.
Right. And then the city also, from what I understand, was saying that, you know, the data was unusable, it was encrypted, it was corrupted, you know, don't look here. And a lot of it had to do with first responder data, like their police and fire folks, I guess, were complaining that they were starting to see issues with their credit and other issues that were happening. And the town was, or the city was saying, it's not us, couldn't be us, right?
Yeah, I think so. We heard from the police union here that a few officers had their bank accounts drained, had credit cards open in their names, and we started getting more and more kind of tidbits of what happens after a ransomware attack. And we had that sit-down interview with the mayor where it was kind of a first sit-down since it had happened, and he had said, the data is encrypted, it's not usable, it's not valuable.
Yeah, I think the quote was encrypted or corrupted, right? Mm-hmm. So he basically was saying either we secured it or when they stole it, it wasn't usable.
But we weren't told who encrypted the data. We couldn't, when we asked they didn't say who it was. So this went against a lot of what we had found and what we had seen. So we, you know, did a small piece, you know, hey, here's the first statement from the mayor. And quickly we heard from Connor Goodwolf. He came forward and he said, let me show you the data. So he came in, sat down with us, and very quickly showed that, you know, hey, we proved it with our own information. You know, I saw my own driver's license in that database. It's the picture of the front and back. My information's in there. Some of our anchors' information is in there. And that's how we confirmed that it's very usable data and it's definitely dangerous in the hands of someone who wants to use it.
Right. And then, of course, the story goes and takes a twist where Connor points this out to you, you know, like, you know, I'm watching the guy stealing it. Here it is right there. And then the mayor says, well, the city says, we're going to stop this guy. We're going to tell him cease and desist. And you shouldn't have been playing in the dark web, right? This is where the story takes a very weird, dark turn, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. So we had a few different stories. It takes a while to download data off the dark web, which we were learning. So we had a few different stories with Connor. One of them was people who checked into City Hall. Another was the city attorney's database, which was domestic violence victims, their, you know, socials, addresses, confidential information that no one should ever see. And we were not putting that out there. You know, we were not saving that anywhere. We were just telling the public, this is what's out there. And then I think it was the third or fourth story we did about the data was the Columbus police database. And that included undercover officer names, information. There was the Vice unit, which has been since disbanded, but it was, you know, officer identities. So we took that to Columbus police and said, did you know about this? What are you doing to protect your officers? And then the next day they filed a lawsuit against Connor.
Right. So, you know, the guy points out the obvious, tells everybody that the first responders' data is available. And it's not like the police officers themselves couldn't check this out. It's not like rocket science to go find these auctions. It's public, almost practically public knowledge. I'll tell my listeners, do not play in the dark web. You do not know who you're playing with. But it's not hard to find if you want to look there, and you can find tons of people who will show it to you. So when they had the lawsuit against Goodwolf there, I mean, what did the public say about that? And that's just so chilling.
Yeah, I think it's really great clarification there regarding the dark web as well. You know, we personally did not go on the dark web during our investigation. We had very highly trained cybersecurity experts who looked on there for us. Now, that's not to say we couldn't. Right. It's just that we didn't want to take the risk. We knew that somebody who was better trained for this was probably the best person to do this. But, you know, the public, I think that in particular, the Electronic Frontier Foundation we spoke with took issue with a lot of the descriptions behind the lawsuit that, you know, Connor Goodwolf was using sophisticated software to access the city's data on the dark web. And what the EFF told us was, well, it's as sophisticated as downloading an app. That's really all there is to it. It's just a specialized internet browser that can look at parts of the internet that something like Google Chrome can't.
And off of that, I mean, again, to your listeners, do not go on the dark web. But after we ran that story, I actually had viewers email me screenshots saying, I wanted to test this for myself. Here's the city's data. and sent me screenshots.
Right, because it's not that hard. So when the city did this and tried to sue Goodwolf there to kind of cease and desist and act like he was doing something malicious or illegal, I guess from what I understand, that's finally been lifted. But what are the people saying about a government that would do that to people that are pointing out the truth? I mean, there's got to be some sort of up in arms, you know, pitchforks and torches going to the mayor saying, what kind of mayor are you when you do this to the people like this? But I mean, IT people would think that way, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll definitely say that the reaction from the public was negative. The responses that we've seen that people have told us personally, they were not happy with how things played out here. One of the stories that we did, once we first kind of discovered that the data leak not only affected city employees, but also public people like residents of Columbus, was we went to some of the doors of some of the people who were found in the hack and asked them if they were aware of it. And they were shocked. They were not very happy that they had no notification before we knocked on their doors that their data was compromised. And so, from the IT world in particular, we also had a cybersecurity professional who drafted an open letter to the entire cybersecurity and pen testing community, specifically calling on the city of Columbus to reconsider their lawsuit against Connor Goodwolf. And as far as we know, as of today, it's still in progress. They've reached a preliminary injunction in the case that has basically made a form of agreement between Connor Goodwolf and the city, but there is still an active lawsuit against him.
Yeah, the letter was addressed to the city attorney, and the agreement where it stands now is Connor can download the data, but only share it with the city. So he has to go through them. If he is working with them, that's an agreement they made together. He can give them the data, and he can only disclose to the media data that would be available through a public records request as long as the city approves what he's going to say first.
It just puts a whole new twist on see something, say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think that in Connor Goodwolf's case, he not only was telling us about this when it happened, you know, he was willing to show that there was more here than what I think the city was putting out publicly, but he also tried to warn the city first. We actually filed some records requests with the city for voicemails from Connor Goodwolf and found at least one that he sent over to them before he ever spoke with us. He was trying to get in contact with them to tell them about what he had found in the data before he spoke to media.
It's just crazy. So he tried to do the right thing, and then they're literally prosecuting him for it. You just can't make that up, especially in this world of data breaches, which you can pretty much have a data breach every 20 minutes, it seems. The only difference about this data breach is that the city is like completely trying to cover it up and get in front of people who are trying to point out the obvious. It just seems like a bizarre handling of a data breach. And they should already have a policy for dealing with data breaches and have an incident response policy. Clearly they don't. I mean, they want us to file our car taxes and they want to make sure our dogs have a license, but they don't have a policy to have an incident response for this type of data breach. You'd think it already would be out there formally and explained, but it doesn't sound like it is still based on your interviews of people who have not been informed yet of this breach.
The city has made a website now that is the kind of general public notification. That is where you can sign up for the free credit monitoring, and it kind of explains a little bit of what happened. But where we are right now is we're getting updates from the Department of Technology at city council meetings about how many systems are restored. Last update, I believe it was about 73% were restored. And
wait, as of October 16th, only 73% of this has been restored since the July incident?
As of probably last week, so maybe a little bit more, but yeah, it was 73% were restored, and there was some partial restored, and the rest still needed to be restored. And they're working on a breach report, which they said they will have a public hearing about with City Council. They said they expect that by the end of October, but we haven't gotten that date yet. So that's kind of the next step that we're waiting for.
But Isabel, interestingly, in your report to me, you said that they said that they weren't impacted. Their IT was able to prevent them from being impacted. But clearly with 73% only up now, this many months later, is that's also not true, obviously? I mean, as an IT person, I can deduce that pretty easily. It's not true. So they weren't truthful on that as well, it sounds like.
They were saying that, and they still stand by this, they're saying that they prevented the encryption of their systems. And they've been saying it could have been a lot worse. They prevented the encryption, but we haven't gotten, and we're still waiting on more insight into what was breached and how many systems are still down and what those systems were. I think it was about 448 systems we know of right now that were impacted.
Yeah, if there's one thing I can add also related to the their response, we briefly touched on the credit monitoring they're offering now. What essentially happened, how that started, was once we heard from the police union that there were officers who were seeing the signs of a hack or their data being compromised, that their bank accounts were being drained, the city actually announced separately that it would set up free credit monitoring for city employees out of precaution. Once it became apparent after we spoke with Connor Goodwolf that the public was also affected by the leaked data, that credit monitoring was extended to the public. So that's okay. Where that's coming from is there was a program set up for city employees, and then it was extended to pretty much anybody who may be affected by this. There's not necessarily specifics on who was affected, but it's just kind of the idea of if there's any possibility you've been impacted by the data leak, you should sign up for this out of precaution is kind of the messaging there.
All right, I guess it's a little helpful. So next steps for you guys as far as your NBC4 Investigates approach to this story, what are you going to look at? What are you going to hold them to going forward? Are there going to be any changes in how these people are supposed to report incidents? Are there going to be any changes on the communications with public? Are there going to be any changes on not suing people who say, I saw something, I'm seeing something? I mean, that has to be happening, I hope, over there.
There are definitely a lot of questions that we have about what comes next. And with the Investigates department, we are in a position to really stick to and follow this story. So it's not a story that's going to be going anywhere anytime soon. We're going to stick to this as long as it takes. The breach report is that big next step. We're going to see what they put out in there, what they're willing to share with us, and keep pushing them on the questions that we do need answered.
Well, keep it up, Mark. Fearborn and Isabel Cleary, NBC4 Investigates out there in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you so much for explaining this to us. And please stay in touch. I'd love to have you tell us what happens and how things hopefully improve over there in Columbus, Ohio for the folks.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, my pleasure. We'll be right back.
All right. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. But real quickly, there has been an update. Mark Fearborn reached out to me yesterday afternoon, actually.
Oh.
Because I had to record that interview earlier in the week for their availability. Turns out the folks in Columbus, Ohio have dropped the lawsuit against Connor Goodwolf, the whistleblower who pointed out the mayor was lying. So it's nice. That's a nice thing they could do. To not sue the guy who said, guys, you're lying. And that's probably a good step where
probably
where you don't prosecute the guy who's pointing out you're lying to something that any of us can find out ourselves. It's the most crazy thing I've ever heard in this day and age that lawyer inside of that administration figured, we'll sue this guy. We'll shut him up.
Well, if I remember correctly, the text of their lawsuit basically accused Connor Goodwolf of being a criminal.
Right.
Because he was dealing with criminals.
Right.
On the dark web.
Right.
So it's almost as if they're saying by definition,
right,
because he managed to see this data, he must himself be a criminal.
Right. So that if you wanted to use an analogy, it would be driving down a street in Hartford where they might be selling crack, and you see that they're selling crack. Guess what? You're a criminal.
you're a criminal because you saw them selling a crack and you were in a part of town where people sell crack.
Right. That's how nutty this story is. So we put the link up there for you. It's kind of a sad case, and it shouldn't be how government operates, shouldn't be how any of that operates. If you're of the people, for the people, you shouldn't be suing the people to shut up when the people are trying to help. So that's that. And going forward, we also wanted to follow up a little bit more on all your texts that have been, and your calls that have been coming in about the texts that are scamming you today.
Yeah, I did a little research, and I had even on my own phone, I use Google Messages on my Samsung phone.
Yeah, me too.
And it was automatically filtering some incoming texts to spam, which meant that I didn't even get notification. I did get one of those texts from the post office that I saw.
But from the alleged, alleged.
Right. And then I marked it as spam in the app, and I, forgot about it until now. And it turns out that in my spam since end of September, there have been three of them.
Yeah.
Two of them were picked up by the app or by my carrier as spam and just sent there, and I didn't even know about them until I went and looked.
That's how you want a spam filter to work.
The other thing that I did was I did a little research, and there is a dedicated, widespread, intensive smishing campaign.
Smishing.
Which is SMS or simple message system, text message campaign emulating the post office. Yep. And it's been underway since the end of September, and we're going to post an article about it so that you can read about this, and that's why a lot of people are calling in about it.
Right.
There really is something going on out there, so be very careful, people.
Like I said, those people who have really running the campaign, they probably have a better health care plan than you. They probably get paid better than you.
Another thing that we can do is
get more time off than you.
True. Another thing we can do is post an article about how to handle these spams on your phone.
Sure.
And report them, whatever.
Yep, sounds good. We'll do that. Let's get to your calls. You're going to go to Simsbury and Kevin. What's going on, Kevin?
Hi there. I've been trying to get involved with Proton.
Proton, yes.
Yeah, and because of all this email hacking that's going on.
Yeah.
And the simple question is, I've started with it, and I'm kind of like going through all their steps and things.
Yep.
Is if you get hung up, can you call them? Is there a way to talk to them, or?
Well, as with many IT services, it's not as easy. But I think they do have some level of customer service.
They do have customer service available.
Yeah, so you can find some help. Are you not able? Did you try it yet? Did you start it yourself yet?
Yeah, I've started it. Yeah.
What is your difficulty?
Well, the only thing I was trying to figure. One thing I'm trying to figure out is because they're asking for like a your email, so which I'm giving them because they want a recovery thing.
They want an email recovery, yeah?
Yeah, and it kind of struck me kind of odd that I'm giving them an email that I'm currently using, which is what I'm trying not to, that's where I don't want to get invaded, if you will.
Correct.
But I'm giving them that in one hand, and then I'm trying to figure out how to pull everything through so that it's truly on Proton, and I take it that they're going to filter everything that's coming through my other old emails.
Well, when you say filter, you can set up forwarding, right? You can tell your old email to forward to your new email address. That'd be from your old email. When you forward that over, you can also deal with the fact that whatever mail client you're using can then, of course, download the past mail from your old mailbox. Are you going to plan on using the Proton mail system specifically, or are you going to use like Outlook or Mail or some sort of mail client to manage this?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if I use Proton, does that mean that if people still send me my old email,
you'll get it. Come into the you'll get it if box. You forward it.
If the old email hosting, if you can set up forwarding for that to the Proton address, you can use that. But what I think Proton wants is they want an alternative way to get a hold of you in case something really goes
awry.
You know, way wrong, mm-hmm. and you need to like do a password reset, and you need an alternative method of contact to verify who you are.
Right.
And it's always good. It's always good to have like one of those free addresses from Gmail or Yahoo or whatever,
right?
Which you only use just for this verification process.
Right. I have a Gmail account that I don't even open for anything important.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because they also ask the phone number. So
of your cell phone.
I toss that in there too.
Yes, you know? That's fine.
So it's kind of unfortunate, but in real terms, it's kind of necessary to have these alternative contacts.
Right. So knowing who you are, right, that Kevin has an issue with his mailbox is important because, again, they have no other – aside from that, your data is encrypted. So your emails are encrypted point to point. They have no access to anything within your system, and they can't give any access to your system because they don't have the other key. That kind of access would have to be given – you'd have to have – given permission for a third party to look at whatever your correspondence is.
You really do want to shut down those old email accounts you had in terms of communicating with folks and go to the Proton if you really want to lock, if you want to really be as secure as you can be secure.
Correct. You'd want to do that. And you'd want to also make sure you change away from those free email boxes you're using to log into your bank, let's say, or to your retirement account, let's say.
Because
those are, as far as I'm concerned, kind of junk. And configure the access through your new Proton account. That way, again, lot less chance of you being impacted by any kind of correspondence happening between you and your broker or you and your real estate person or you and your lawyer. If you're using a secured email method, the bad guys have a lot less chance. If it's Gmail and you've already been phished because they said you got a text that said your Gmail system was compromised, please input your credentials, then they've got that access, right? You're not going to see that. There's not a lot of hackers out there that are going to say, all right, I'm going to try to figure out how to get the Proton folks. Those folks who tend to be more security conscious, let's go after those guys. No, they're really not doing that. So again, you're more off to the side while the rest of the masses get literally like shooting fish in a barrel.
Okay. All right.
All right, well, Kevin.
Good. All right. That gives me a good running start on this thing.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right.
Good luck.
I tried the middle of the range one, you know, the free versus the next one. Like you said, there's an awful lot of stuff, and maybe it's kind of worth protecting.
It's time to really pay for your email system instead of having a free system.
And you get a lot of other services with that too, which is nice. Right.
Yeah, I see, like, the pass. They have a pass monitor and that sort of thing, too.
Yeah, very good, Kevin.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a bunch, guys.
You're welcome, sir.
Your show is great, as always.
Oh, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Long time listener.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, we're going to step out for a quick break. A couple lines open for you. Feel free to get online. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. All right, we are back in the final stretch here of Computer Talk with Tab. If you missed anything and you want to catch it, and, you know, you want to catch any interviews, catch what are some of the things we talk about. We have a podcast. You might have heard those things. And if you follow Odyssey and go to the Odyssey app, or if you get podcasts at Amazon, or if you get podcasts at Apple, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours.
If you can tolerate listening to us that long.
Exactly. They're available to you. You can subscribe. Right. And then you'll never miss an episode of Computer Talk. And hopefully we can help you with something. So feel free to do that. Now, as usual and customary, we still have some more news going on here until you guys call in. 860-522-9842 is the number. Do you want to bring up anything there, Dennis?
Well, I wanted to mention this is a story that's, you know, we knew was coming.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when it comes down the pike. There is a radio station in Poland that has ditched all of its on-air talent in favor of AI.
Karen and Bob have taken over the Polish radio station?
Well, Karen and Bob, maybe Buffy and Bill, I don't know who, but what they've done is they've replaced all their staff with talking heads called Emmy, Kuba, and Alex, and they are supposed to be college students
So the prompt was, please emulate college students in a radio who will run a radio station.
Yeah, and they're generating the audio doing that.
Is it a music station, probably?
I believe so. Let's see what it says.
That'd be interesting. The three, they didn't just do two. It's actually a company of three AI-generated.
AI entities? I don't know what else to call them.
Yeah. Zeros and ones.
But, and then, well, there are some public radio stations in Poland that are also in some financial trouble. So it looks like this is a thing that might happen even more over there.
Right. They're calling this a fiscal approach to doing this, right? But we don't know what type of radio station it is. I mean, I can't imagine it being talk radio per se, but I could easily see it being, you know, here's the song list. You could easily have an AI do some sort of riff on, you know, coming up next, you know, it's whatever, whatever, you know, Billy Joel, We Didn't Start the Fire in Polish. One of those three folks saying something funny. Because again, it can do it. You've heard Karen and Bob. I mean, Karen and Bob are pretty funny when they found out they were AI.
that was precious.
So it's nutty out there. So it looks like the Polish radio stations are being taken over by the machines.
Well, one of them at least.
Yeah. In other news, surprise, 90% of Americans think iPhones cost too much.
What?
This is a PC Mag article.
What? $1,200 isn't too much to spend on a phone, right?
Respondents in a recent survey overwhelmingly feel that Apple's phones are overpriced. Yet, here's the funny part, 2 out of 5 would go into credit card debt to get the iPhone 16. So you can't afford, even, you know it's too expensive, but 90% of you know it's too expensive, but 2 out of 5 of you will spend way too much money. I'm going to debt to say you have an iPhone.
All to get Apple Intelligence.
I don't know about that.
Well, no, that's the name of their AI systems.
Is it,
Apple Intelligence.
Is it that, or is it to say you have an Apple iPhone and so everyone else can look at you and say,
we know what the reality
is. You can say, do you own that phone or does the bank own that phone? So, yeah, it's a big survey out there. They surveyed 200 participants. Oh, we got a quick question out there? All right. We're going to go to the calls here with a quick question out there from Mike in North Haven. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys, I had a quick question for you. First off, thanks a couple years ago for the Go Net Speed thing. I mean, I work at home and it's been fabulous. But I have a client, she's an elderly client, and she's, of course, getting ripped off by Comcast and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about Go Net Speed, and it's available to her. She just, you know, of course, she has a little concern, making change, so on and so forth, but I think she's interested. The only thing I want to make sure is that I give her the right advice that, I mean, she watches whatever TV.
Yep.
I think she's got a grandson that games in the house.
Yep.
And she's got adult daughter.
Yeah.
500 megabytes?
Oh, plenty.
Solid for her?
Plenty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. She could even go a little lower, but maybe just 500 just be safe.
Yeah, I think $500 costs you $40, right?
It was that, or I was thinking the 750, but 750 way too much.
Don't need it.
She doesn't need that.
Okay. Okay, perfect.
All right, Mike?
I just wanted to confirm my own thought there, yeah.
All right. Guys. You're welcome.
Yep.
Glad to have you help, Mike. And I'll put that iPhone article out there. You can read it yourself. But if you listen to this show, you know I'm not surprised. I want to thank Mike G for posting everything over on our Twitter, our X account, and over on Facebook. Thank Dennis here for posting everything live. Thank the amazing award-winning Matt Sirois as producer today, and Mark Fearborn and Isabel Cleary from Columbus WCMH TV. We'll see you next time.